Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Greater Boston can claim three more winners of this year's Nobel Prize. Esther Duflo and Abhijit Banerjee from MIT and Michael Kremer from Harvard won the Nobel Prize in Economics for their experimental approach to solving global poverty. Duflo becomes the award's youngest winner at age 46. She shares the honor with fellow MIT colleague and husband, Banerjee. The couple also co-founded the Abdul Latif Jameel Poverty Action Lab, or JPAL, at the school. Kremer, the third winner, was in London today, but Duflo and Banerjee are in Cambridge. As we said, they're married, and they told us about getting the call this morning.
Well, we got one call because Esther discovered that I was one of the other awardees and passed the phone to me. So we got one call that saved them some breath.
Esther, you're the second woman and the youngest economics laureate ever. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling quite like it's unbelievable. I haven't fully realized it. At the same time, I also realized that the reason that I can get a Nobel Prize while so young is because we are speaking for a movement that is much broader than us and that has swollen in a way faster than even we could have anticipated. So that's the only reason why I get to have a Nobel Prize so young, and I am humbled and delighted and happy to take this for the team.
Abhijit, for our listeners who may not know how the process works, did you know you were in the running, or was the call this morning just a complete surprise for you?
It was a complete surprise. I mean, you know, people will say X is in the running, Y is in the running. My view is that these things, I hear all these stories, I don't believe any of them, I pay no attention to them. I assume that it will be announced and I'll find out who it was, and I had no particular sense that it was even plausible that it would be us this year. So I wasn't paying much attention.
Now, I heard in another interview you gave today that you actually went back to sleep after the phone call. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, it was very early. The person from the Swedish Academy explained that in 45 minutes, there'll be a press conference, and after that, everything is going to become very, very, will become extremely lively. And he was right. So I figured this was my only time.
Very smart. Esther, global poverty, it's a huge problem. I think for a lot of people, it can seem insurmountable. Yet this shared award is, to simplify it, for using experimentation to ask and answer smaller, more manageable questions within this incredibly complex subject. First, is that a reasonable description? And if so, can you give us an example or two of some of the questions you and your teams have looked at?
That's a very reasonable way to describe it. But the point is that if you think poverty in general, that seems to be a very large, very big subject. But if you start looking at it in more detail, it's really a number of problems. Being poor, it's not just about money. It's about not having access to the right kind of education. It's about not being as healthy as you can. It's about not being able to get a job if you're a woman. And once you start thinking about all of these problems one at a time, then you can apply much more rigor and a much more scientific approach to address them. And of course, each of these studies is just one study and illuminates one aspect of the problem. But I was talking earlier about a movement in JPAL, the network that we have created and that we run. There are now 400 researchers who are either affiliates of JPAL or are working with JPAL one way or the other.
400 researchers all around the world?
All around the world. And together they've produced thousands of those studies. And so with thousands of these studies, we get thousand little spotlight on one particular problem, and there are things that we understand much, much better. And in fact, over the last 20 years, many things have gone much better in the lives of the poor worldwide.
Can you give us an example of one of those thousands of studies, one question it asked or one experiment that it attempted?
So, for example, if we want to know how to get parents to immunize their children.
Immunization.
To immunize their children. Something which is we know is extremely cost-effective and really saves millions of lives every year, but still there are 25 million children every year who don't get the essential immunization. So how do you change that? So in one particular project, we set up an experiment where we worked in 120 villages with an NGO. And in those half of those villages, the NGO tried to really improve the supply of immunization by supplying regular camps, rain or shine. And so those were 60 centers, and 60 centers got no intervention. And in 30 of those 60 centers, in addition, also randomly chosen, parents got a small reward to bring their kids to the immunization center.
They get like a financial reward?
Exactly. In this case, a kilo of lentils for each immunization. And after 1 year, you can compare what happens in the 30 villages that got both the lentils and the camps, the 30 villages that got just the camp compared to the one that had the business as usual. And we found some effect of improving the supply, but a much larger effect of adding the small incentives. And so you multiply this by 1,000 and you start having a lot of ideas of what could be done.
That's very helpful. Abhijit, there will be skeptics out there who will say, one can't possibly do enough of those things across the hundreds of millions of people experiencing extreme poverty to make it all work. And yet your team just won a Nobel Prize for suggesting that it can. How does one have faith that all these pieces can come together to fight global poverty on its scale?
So I think one of the things we wrote a book a few years ago called Poor Economics, which was exactly aimed to doing this, is to pull the strings from the various studies and kind of try to understand what the general insight is. So it's true that, you know, each study is one study of one intervention in one place. I mean, the studies are often large. They have often, you know, up, sometimes even like a million people involved in them. But what I think was what's very useful, once you have a bunch of studies, you start to see the patterns. For example, one of the patterns, you have people being offered at reasonable prices things that would make their health better. And you discover that they really don't want to pay those prices. The market prices somehow people perceive to be too high. So a general insight from this is that, you know, trying to price kind of these kinds of health goods, things like insecticide treated bed nets or water purification, or in our case immunization, sort of to price it at the market price is kind of hopeless. Then you just miss everybody. No, people aren't willing, for whatever reason, they're not willing to pay for it. So you'll get the insight that you just should start of thinking of, you know, giving things away free, or even giving people a little gift to do them, and not just sitting on the high horse and saying, look, you know, this is good for them, they should just do it. That applies across the board to many, many of these health interventions.
I think it's really possible when the two of you give those examples to begin to see how the behavioral change over time could accumulate to really help fight poverty. Did the two of you or each of you always know that you wanted to take this small pieces experimental approach, or was there a moment when you thought, we've been doing this wrong, we need to do something differently?
We have a lot of moments where we thought we were doing something in particular wrong, that we were not thinking about a particular problem the right way. But I think we never had a doubt that the approach of going slowly, piece by piece, problem by problem, brick by brick, was the wrong one. We strongly believe in that one. The great advantage of working in this way is that even if we get something wrong, and we do all the time, then we feel, okay, we can move on to the next problem and do better.
You've spoken about this network of scholars all over the world who are working on the same problems, passionate to use the same approaches. You and your colleague, Michael Kremer, have won a Nobel Prize. What does that mean for the entire community of scholars doing this kind of work?
It's a huge endorsement for the whole community. We're lucky to be where we are. We happen to be at the beginning of this movement, and we get some reflected glory from that. And I think it's great that this recognition has come, but it's a recognition for this whole body of work, the way this entire field of development economics, which was so much based on general principles and received wisdom, has changed. It's much more of a live place where people have hypotheses. The hypotheses are pretty sophisticated. They test those hypotheses. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. And then you evolve your hypothesis, you come to yet another possibility. That the sense of, you know, quick and nimble learning is extremely exciting, and it's something that we want to share with the rest of the world. So if this buys us, you know, more ears in the world, that I hope will benefit the entire community. And in particular, I know that it will benefit the whole entire community, because there's so many young and excited people who are great researchers who will see the new opportunities created by it and go and do the new work that's going to be even more interesting and exciting.
The total prize is about $900,000, split among the two of you and Professor Creamer. Any thoughts on how you might use that prize money?
When Marie Curie and her husband got the Nobel Prize, the first one for Marie Curie, they bought a gram of radium with the money. And when I found out this story, I was 8 or 9, and I thought this was fabulous, that they would put the achievement of a career back and plow it back to their work. So I think we are going to try and find whatever is the equivalent in our work of the gram of radium.
That is Professors Esther Duflo and Abhijit Banerjee, economists from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. They, along with Professor Michael Creamer from Harvard, jointly won the Nobel Prize in Economics today. Thank you to both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk about the balance between pregnancy and work. And we'll take your calls. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tiziana Deering. Hang on, there's more Radio Boston.